This is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world-famous comedy cellar, coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog and on the Laugh Button Podcast Network. Dan Natterman coming at you. We got Noam Dorman here, owner of the world-famous comedy cellar. Periel Aschenbrand is with us. And we have Isabel Hagen will be joining us in a bit. She is a comic and a violist, but we'll talk with her later. The big news this week is Dan Natterman's book is out.
Woohoo!
Ira Spiro before COVID went live.
Where are our cameras? Can we see them in monitor here? We can see them? This is Dan Natterman's book. Go ahead.
That's
Dan.
My book, Ira Spiro before COVID. It's been out for about a week and a half. It's available on Amazon, either as a paperback or an ebook. And if you have a Kindle, you can get a free sample. You have nothing to lose, people, by downloading. I think they give you 3 chapters.
Read the quotes on the back.
Well, the quotes on the back
are impressive.
You can read the quotes on the back.
Read the quotes on the back.
How annoyingly good is this book? The always funny Dan Natterman wrote a great novel full of surprises. Jim Gaffigan. For now, Dan Natterman to take a novel about an erotic comedian and his fear of success is so out of his wheelhouse, it's mind-blowing. I'm kind of torn. I think this book could sell millions of copies, but the potential adverse effects on Dan may not be worth it. Howie Mandel. Dan brings his uniquely hilarious point of view to every page of this novel. I didn't want it to end. Ophira Eisenberg. Hey, why didn't you ask me for a quote?
I know. Why didn't you ask me for a quote?
Well, it's not too late. I can always change it. But by the way, of those 3 quotes, I'm pretty sure Ophira is the only one that actually read it. But I can't say, as far as the other two are concerned, they may or may not have. I just don't know.
First of all, Jim Gaffigan is a pretty devout Catholic.
Yeah, so you don't think he would lie?
I don't think, because he didn't word it with plausible deniability. He said a great novel full of surprises, as if he.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of times when you read the blurbs on a book, especially a book written by a comic, a lot of times it'll be like, so and so is the funniest guy I know.
Yeah, like Tom Papa's book, the blurbs in Tom Papa's
book. Right, it won't actually reference the book itself. So, I don't know. Ophira did tell me she read it and very much enjoyed it. The other two just sent me the blurb, and I really just don't know.
I mean, it looks like it's very big type with small words. I think she. I'm kidding.
You think I'd be able to make?
Yeah, I think
make
it.
Well, I actually redid the font. The font. I have a new font. That's an old version. The new font. Looks
yeah, I don't like this font at all.
The new font looks a little bit more classically like a novel that you would normally see. So there's a new font. Anyway,
what are these dashes?
That's dialogue.
Right. Don't you put quotation marks?
You don't have to.
People. Let me see.
First of all,
I don't think I've ever seen dashes.
Is
that like a script?
No. That's a very common way of doing it.
How come I've never seen that
before? It's not a very common way of doing it.
Yeah, it's a pretty common way of doing it.
I've never seen that.
Okay. I've read more than one book in my life, and I've never seen it done like this.
Well, I have.
Okay.
And, you don't need to disparage the book.
I'm not disparaging the book.
Out of the gate, but
you're a trendsetter. Nobody cares. No one's going to buy the book or not buy the book because of the way you do your handling.
As far as Howie Mandel's quote about selling 1 million copies, we're a little far from the 1 million at this point. We're at about 80.
Well, listen, famous people sometimes only sell 5,000. So 80 is pretty good.
Well, 80 in a week and a half is okay. I don't know how many of those are people I know personally. Probably about half. And I'll be doing some marketing. Yeah,
You have to go on like a sort of book tour, or you have to bring it with you when you go do your shows.
We're sending out an email this week. Can't you give me a little blurb? Something to send in the email, and I'll take a graphic off Amazon, and I'll promote your book on our tour.
Okay, I'll send you.
That's so nice.
That's very nice. That's very
well.
Nice.
You didn't let me finish,
and take 25%.
No, yeah, we could do that.
Okay, great. I'll send you that information. I'm also I was on Jim Norton's podcast. I don't know, how much mileage I got out of that. It's really hard to say because the sales coming in dribs and drabs, and I don't know how much of it is attributable to my Facebook posts or doing Jim's show.
Well, how do we get you on Rogan?
We probably don't get me on Rogan.
Why don't say that? You could probably get on Rogan.
I mean, Ari.
You always undersell yourself.
Ari Shaffir does Rogan a lot. I suppose I could talk to him, but I doubt very highly. I just don't know Rogan.
Well, if Rogan read the, I don't know if Rogan reads books, but if you gave him a copy and he read it and he liked it, that would
right. But let's face it, people to read a book is a big deal. I mean, look how long it's taken you to read.
my books, for
you know,
example.
Books, and you're friends with Perry Ellen. You haven't.
No,
read
I'm
a book.
I'm going to read your book.
But the point is, it takes a long time to read, and most,
or not at all,
or not at all, and. Even the people that are friends of mine, you know, that said, I can't wait to read it, you know.
Listen, I have trouble getting to emails. I mean, it's tough. It's tough.
You know what? People make time for the things that they want to do.
Absolutely.
You should, Gilbert, I'll bet you could go on Gilbert's podcast.
Great Big Colossal?
Yeah.
Well, that I mean, I could try.
Yeah.
You know, he tends to have, like, famous guests that are 80 years old and more.
Does Howie Mandel have a podcast?
Yeah, I'm doing his next week. He said, we don't have a date, but he said I could do it.
Now, that's amazing.
Let's get to the real heart of the matter, Dan, here.
Okay, my colonoscopy?
Did you had it?
I had it.
I want to hear about that, too.
Okay.
Is this book good for a movie?
I think it's good for a movie or a Netflix series, yeah. I mean, yes. I wrote it half with that in mind, because that's the only way to make any money.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting at, yeah. So you must have a master plan here.
Well,
so you
got to
get it in
the
hands. Yeah, you got to get it to Judd Apatow. Judd, you listen to this podcast. Maybe your next star vehicle will be Dan Natterman's book.
Well, he's certainly he's certainly welcome to get a coffee at half off. A coffee at half off. No, I'm kidding. Well, I'd be happy.
Did
to
you send
him.
It to him?
Send it to him.
No, I haven't. I'll contact him.
I have been on.
I just wanted to make sure it's good first before I start sending it to people that might judge me.
You look very handsome in this picture.
That's Lamour Garfinkel took that picture.
I want to go on record here is that I've been saying for a while.
Use your regular voice.
That Dan is, it's Philip Roth meets Jonathan Ames.
I know who Philip Roth is. Who's the other person?
Jonathan Ames.
He's a more current.
Never heard of him.
Well, that's.
Is it like Banksy?
But Perielle hasn't read it either.
I've read enough of it. That's your shortcoming that you haven't heard of Jonathan, not mine.
Mike, you know who Jonathan Ames is? All right, I'm with the regular people. What is it?
Okay, Dan, do you know who Jonathan Ames is?
I know who he is.
Who is he?
Oh, okay.
He's an author. He wrote The Extra Man.
That was turned into a novel.
And it was turned into a movie with...
Sorry, that was
with,
turned into
Kevin
a movie.
Klein, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a small movie, but it was nonetheless.
And a television show with Ted Danson and Zach Galifianakis.
The Good Place?
No.
Okay, so what else are we getting to?
Oh, see, now that it's a real thing, he moves on.
How was the colonoscopy?
I'll tell you, the doctor was very impressed with my colon. I'm not going to lie. There were no polyps, thank God, because I don't want to have to go back in like 3 years, right?
If they 5 years. I had a small polyp.
What do they
do? Not the last time, the time prior.
Huh? They stick a thing up your butt?
Yeah, they stick a thing up. I mean, you're asleep for it. They put you on propofol.
They can keep you awake if you prefer, Perry.
Oh, I think they can, actually. I don't
if you'd prefer.
But the doctor was also impressed with my prep. So I don't mean to brag, but he was very impressed that I had cleaned, because you have to clean yourself out down there.
Like you have to wipe your butt?
No, you have to take a special solution, which is disgusting and horrifying, and then you get diarrhea for like hours. It's a horrific process.
So and apparently that the prep is really the key, because there are a lot of people who actually get colon cancer and die in close proximity to their last colonoscopy, where they were given all clear.
Yeah,
and that's attributed mostly, as I've heard, to bad prep. The doctor just can't see all that shit down there.
Ew.
Well, doesn't the doctor tell you, look, you didn't do a good job, we got to redo this?
Yeah, I would think you're right that there's something. I mean, I heard this from a doctor, so they didn't concentrate on the fact that that's no excuse. The doctor should say, you know what, it's not clean enough. You're gonna have to come back another day. But sometimes they don't do that.
How come I don't have to do a colonoscopy?
Well, you do at 50. They recommend it. You don't have. Nobody has to do it, but at 50 they recommend it. Now you're not 50, so
no, I'm not.
So they
not
don't
yet.
Unless you have family history, in which case you should do it more frequently. I do wonder whether they can find residue of bodily fluid in there.
You mean like semen?
Like semen.
Did they find any
for you? Not after the prep. Not unless you deposit it there after the prep.
Well, you never know. Just one before you go, a little send off.
you're actually right, because
they find that for either one of you guys?
I was going to say this.
Well,
I'm not gay.
Yeah.
And not there's anything wrong with it. And and I don't want to have anal sex with a man. But if I were, I would want to do it after he prepped.
Yes, that's the best time to do it.
That would be the time.
Clean as a whistle. But
a lot of gay guys do use enemas.
But Dove and I would
have sex.
How do you know this?
Because I have a lot of gay guy friends, and we talk about sex.
Dove and I were joking that if they could find that, then afterwards you get the bill. And it's like, okay, that's $10,000 for the colonoscopy and $200,000 not to tell your wife what you've been doing. So the good news is I'm not going to do that on stage. I do have a couple colonoscopy jokes, though, that I did come up with that I'll test out tonight. So I know the colonoscopy is kind of a well-worn topic in stand-up, but there's always room to do it better, hopefully.
Why aren't you going to do that one on stage? That was funny.
Well, I might. Okay. I just think semen, whenever we get into bodily fluids, and that's an extra layer of dirty. There's like dirty, and then there's bodily fluid.
Right, that's my area.
You know what I mean?
And then you can't make fun of anything gay anymore.
And also, yeah, it's gay, so, you know.
You can only punch.
It then becomes
punch up,
problematic.
Dan, punch up. Don't you know punch
up? I've abandoned my, I mean, speaking of jokes you can't do, I've abandoned my joke about George Washington saying, I abandoned it. I tried it one more time. I think you were even in the room and it was like, got nothing. I said, okay, that's it. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah, he talked about it. You want to tell it?
I've talked about it before, but just if you haven't listened, I had a joke about how you go back in time and you say to George Washington, hey, George Washington, I'm from the future. And believe it or not, by 2050, white people will be a minority of the U.S. population. And Washington would be like, really? We're going to have that many slaves that white people? And so anyway. and it has killed, but it's also just gotten nothing. And it's not worth the 50% of the time it's gotten nothing.
Well, so. I mean, you know, it's a really interesting subject because the joke is obviously not anti-black or pro-slavery or anything like that. It's right. Making fun of the fact that George Washington wouldn't be able to conceive of something so different from what he knew. But the subject has become so risky that nobody even knows what they can or can't laugh at anymore. Very few people have confidence in their own take on things, and so they just seize up, right? That's what happens.
Yeah, and it's not just that they don't laugh, but there's like the occasional like... You know, like, oh my, you know, like almost like an audible gasp. And so I said, it's just not worth it for the times that it does get laughs. I can't take the risk, you know. I mean, maybe if I were a famous comic and into controversy, I don't know. But I'm, you know, I just not worth it to me. So fuck it.
Maybe people would say, hey, you know what, there's something to this that we're just too casual with the concept of slavery. In other words, you wouldn't joke about Jews being, you know, in the concentration camps or burned. Maybe you would burn in the ovens. But when you do, you realize that you're joking about something horrible.
Right.
But we sort of just talk about slavery without fully thinking about what we're talking about. Like how you know, we're talking about something so awful.
Yeah, I mean, I
feel
guess
like that's acknowledged.
I guess and. You know, I'm willing to follow the audience's lead. If they're not into the joke, then I won't do it. I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything wrong, but if it's going to upset people, then obviously I'm not in the business of upsetting people. You know, I'm not, so I'll just not do the joke. But
what I'm saying, like, is what, like, what's,
yeah, I know what you're is, saying. Is, you're is saying, like, even if you said something about the Holocaust that wasn't directly defending that, just bringing it up.
Yeah.
And if you're not Jewish and I'm not black, then it might be. And now, no, Jim Norton, I don't want to tell Jim Norton's joke, so I guess it's a damn good joke, by the way, about the Olympics, but he references Germany. He doesn't say the Holocaust, but he references Germany, and it's very funny.
Well, isn't that movie Funny Thing on the Way to the Forum? Is that the movie? And there's slaves in that movie. They depict slaves, and they're like comical.
Well, that might
with
be.
With Zero Mostel or whatever it is. You know, whatever. Go ahead.
I mean, that was a different time. There was also Blazing Saddles, which...
No, slaves and Blazing Saddles.
No, there weren't, but they like they use the N-word a lot.
Yeah.
And they talk about rape, you know, and it's a comedy. And I don't know if you remember that scene.
Yeah, I do.
I have a really, I know this is going to come as a great shock to you, but I have a really funny.
I'm already shocked.
I have a really funny and smart joke about rape. And I notice that every single time I say the word rape on stage, the audience sort of seizes up. And Lenny Marcus told me that I should try changing it to sexual assault in the same...
Well, if it works, that would be a little better. Yeah.
What's the joke?
No, I'm not going to tell it on here, but...
Why not?
Because I don't want to, because I don't want you to tell me it's not funny. Come to a show and you can see it. But it really did.
I guess I'll never know.
But it really did make a difference. I think that when I said sexual assault, and it was like people didn't get so freaked out and they were able to actually.
Yeah, well, you know, I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but you have a little bit of that thing that some, not all, but some female comics have.
Here we go.
Not in a while. I forget it.
No. Go ahead.
You have some of that thing that some people have, not even female comics.
Uh-huh.
Where you lean into like the vulgarity of the thing, like, and what Lenny was saying is like, you actually don't, that's not what's actually funny about the joke. So you don't need to do that.
Okay, so number one, you have an aversion to vulgarity to begin with. You don't like things that are vulgar.
Yeah, I don't. But, okay, you know, don't, the word vulgar is, you know, has a pejorative meaning to be. You're not supposed to like things that are vulgar, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's
you don't
not,
like things that are obscene. That are.
Yeah, I don't like people talking about taking shits, and I especially don't like. I can't help it. I'm a sexist. What do you want, Mike? I don't like to see pretty girls talking about right. their shit. I don't like it.
Right. But...
And you know what? I represent 99% of people in the world when I say that, even though they won't admit it. Nobody likes to hear that.
No. That's not...
I don't want to hear Mary Tyler Moore, you know, saying I just had diarrhea on the Mary Tyler Moore show.
But it's okay. It's okay to have, you know, like, I don't know, Bobby Kelly talk about it. That doesn't bother you at all.
I don't like it when Bobby Kelly talks about it, but...
But you're more accepting of it.
It goes down easier, yeah, because he's a gross dude, you know. And
here's the thing: I don't think that.
Right, Dan, you agree with me?
Well, I'll say this: I don't mind necessarily when an attractive woman talks about shitting. It's just it's going to make her less attractive to me, but it might still make me laugh.
It's not as funny. Yeah. Go ahead.
I've got news for you guys. I don't think that we're trying to make you be attracted to us when we're.
Well, that's fine.
About
that's fine. I'm just saying my reaction. What my reaction is.
But the point is that I don't think that's why. I don't think that it's about leaning into the vulgarity.
Well, you won't tell us the joke, so we can't just. So Perry L. did have a funny routine about having to do a proctological exam during COVID, and she had to put her ass up against the.
How do you know that joke?
We saw it. I watched one of your shows one time. We watched this. I'm not okay. What's the name of your show?
Oh, We're Not Okay.
We're not okay.
That's Jessica and Rachel's. But yeah,
you did it on that.
Yeah. But I do it in real life. It's funnier in real life.
That's actually funny. Like,
he
thank God that happened
surprised
to you.
But that doesn't gross you out. She's talking about spreading her butt in front of a camera on Zoom.
No, it doesn't gross me out the same way. I have to say it doesn't because it's
and there was like a hemorrhoid in there too. I think.
Yeah, well, that's right. If she started describing the hemorrhoid, I wouldn't like that. But the fact is that she's describing a real life incident, and actually she's a little bit shy about it because it actually happened to her. So that the combination of a little bit of shyness in the delivery and the fact that it's real, it's not like just a contrived reason to talk about disgusting things. Like it's not for shock value.
Right,
it's actually real.
I totally agree with that.
When you say you don't like vulgarity, you don't like just or obscenity coming from women or men, you don't love it either.
I don't love it either. But that's not vulgar. That's like real thing.
Mm. Well, it's whatever it is.
Rape thing's a real thing too.
I mean, people shitting's a real thing too. I mean, you know, all these things are real. But what about Norton's act?
I haven't seen his latest stroke of genius act. I'm hearing that it's
love it.
The greatest thing ever.
It's absolutely
well. He talks
incredible.
About his love of trans women, and it's just so refreshing because you just don't. That's a perspective you just never. I've literally never heard it from any comic ever in the history of comedy.
That's
so for that reason, it's good.
He's also a brilliant comic.
Yeah, he's a great comic. But in addition to that, you're hearing something, you know, you're hearing something you just literally have never heard before. And in honesty, that's quite refreshing. So, you know.
I'm so glad.
So that's why I enjoy it. Like, because I don't watch comedy much anymore. But I have, you know, run down to see Jim. Now I might get tired of it. But the past couple of times, I very much enjoyed hearing him. You know, it was particularly that topic.
All right, where is our Viola?
She's coming soon.
Are you that bored of talking to us? You have 6 more minutes of just us. You think you can handle it?
Well, let's talk about...
Well, what about the Olympics with Simone Biles?
Oh.
I don't know anything about that.
Oh, my God.
Well, Simone Biles, she's a gymnast. She's like, she's 21, which is pretty old for a female gymnast. I'm shocked she's still doing it. But, I mean, that's like, you know, the equivalent of an 80-year-old comedian.
Dan, female gymnast age and decay in performance is a social construct. Go ahead.
But
has nothing to do with that.
She's considered one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest ever. And she dropped out of the Olympics. She said she's having, I don't know precisely, a lot of pressure, mental. Like, she said, I got to concentrate on my mental health, so I'm dropping out. And a lot of people said, oh, you're a quit. I don't know, a lot. People on Twitter say a lot of things. So some people are saying, you know, she's a quitter. She turned her back on her country. She's supposed to be there representing us. And now she's saying, you know, I quit. And again, I don't know how many people really think that. It's hard to believe it's that huge a number that are that ridiculous. But some people are saying that. And obviously, and of course, people are defending Simone Biles. And many are praising her for shining a spotlight on depression and whatever.
Is she depressed?
I don't know what mental issues she has specifically, but bravo to her, people are saying, and I would agree, for acknowledging that there's nothing shameful about having psychological issues, and if you have to drop out, you have to drop out. Is that a reasonable summary of the
Yeah, it is, but I think that also...
Didn't she also have some physical problems?
Yeah.
I think so, but that's not what people seem to be concentrating on. People are forgiving of injury, but... When you say it's too much pressure, I'm too anxious, or whatever it is, then people tend to be less forgiving about it.
You're not going to like this at all, but it's also because she's a young black woman.
Why don't I like that?
Well, because you always say that I make everything about like...
Oh, you say that people are being hard on her because she's a black woman?
And girls, and you... There's our guest.
Could be.
It is Simone Biles doesn't owe anybody shit. I mean, it's outrageous that people have the audacity to even mutter a fucking word.
Yeah, I agree. It's her decision, whatever. I mean, I don't care if she quit because she just felt like quitting. I don't care why she quit.
I mean, this girl has broken literally every single Olympic record as a female gymnast, I think, in like the history of gymnastics.
No. I listen, you would have to presume that winning a gold medal in the Olympics is the lifelong dream of someone who goes...
I think she's already done that.
...into that. But, all right. But still, this is the Madison Square Garden. This is it, right? So you got to... Yeah, hi. So you have to presume that if she didn't want to follow through with that, you have to presume that she had a reason, which was...
Compelling
in some way. It wasn't like, but having said that, if she did back out, you have to presume it's a reason that's not casual.
But even if it were casual, it's her decision.
That's what I was saying. No, but if it is casual, no, I would say no, because there's tremendous amount of resources and time, and you take up a spot on a team that would have been filled by someone else.
Okay, and
people depend on you, and people, your team depends on you for team medals. You don't take a spot on the Olympic team.
Okay, all right.
I changed my mind.
Well, I don't.
No, that's not. But I totally don't think. Right, that's what, okay. I would say that. Why would anybody do that?
Right.
I
mean, no. Nobody would do that. Anyway, Isabel Hagen, ladies and gentlemen, is with us. She is a... Hello, Isabel. It's been a long time. Hello. Oh, no, I saw you actually a couple weeks ago here.
Yeah, we've sort of been floating around each other.
Isabel Hagen is not just a... She's a comedian. I think I did see you once, and a couple of years ago at the Skank Fest or some Brooklyn thing with skanks.
There
was a skank related event out in Brooklyn, and I recall being impressed by Isabel's act, but it was a couple of years ago. I'm sure it's better now. But in any case, she's also a I don't recall
exactly
precisely. But
some people get worse. Let's not deny it. Some people have gotten worse. Many people.
Do people get worse?
There's an arc, yeah.
But not young people like Isabel. At her age, she's still going up. You could at 40, you might start to decline if you just say fuck it and you give up.
I saw young Paul McCartney when he was with the Beatles, but I'm sure he's even better now. No, he's not. No,
well, music and comedy are different in that regard. Anyway, Isabel knows both worlds because not only is she a comedian, she is a concert violist.
I am. Yes. I rarely hear it put that way, concert violist.
Well, are you not a concert violist?
No, I am. I guess I am. I play concerts, and I'm a violist.
Are you in an orchestra?
I'm not in a regular orchestra. I'm a violist for hire. So I've played. I sub in like when the Lion King is happening. I sub in the Lion King. I get hired out for different tours with different artists and things.
Now this thing about the viola does not match stand-up comedy at all, because a person who wants to be a star, they want to be first violin. The first violin, that is the ego spot.
How did you get into supporting viola player?
That's not the personality type of a star.
Well, look.
Right. Well, yeah, I've thought about it. When I started violin when I was 5, and then I switched to viola when I was 10, but not because I didn't want to be a star, just because I had a crush on a guy who played the viola and I wanted to be just like him. And actually, because not a lot of people my age played the viola, I was suddenly in high demand. So I think in a way I was kind of a star as a violist.
There you go. It makes sense.
But I liked being a team player. But then, yeah, comedy, it's a whole different thing. I guess I decided I wanted to be up front.
For the idiots and the ignorant among us, what is the difference between a viola and a violin, precisely? I guess we'll hear the difference when you play it. But
yeah, maybe. But the viola is a little bigger, but you still play it just like a violin.
It's lower? So is it?
It's lower, yeah. It's in between.
E-A-D-G is a violin, and an A-D-G-C is a viola. Right?
Yes. And you play the mandolin, right? Yeah, you say it's the same tuning.
And so the cello. So you would go violin.
And I play the mandola.
You don't play the... Okay.
I do.
You do? Yeah, do you have your mandola?
Not with me, but I have a Gibson mandola.
Mandola.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that there's a mandolin equivalent to every... There's a mandola, a mandocello, and a mandobass. And there's whole mandolin orchestras that play all the instruments of the...
So you would say it's the violins the highest, then you got the viola, then the cello,
yes,
and then the bass.
The viola is the middle child.
Yeah. Okay.
But I would wonder about a mando bass, because the double strings,
I think it's single string.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
All right.
So that's a good question.
At what point does it just become a bass?
Well, it's steel strings like the...
Okay.
Like, it's like piano strings, kind of.
Right.
I don't know. We could look it up. Go ahead. You talk.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. It's
we're talking
just,
Mariel, that's usually on any subject.
The mandocello. So do we want to hear? So, before we get to, because I think you're going to play a little bit for us.
Oh, yeah, I'll play.
Because you have your...
this is what a mando bass looks like. Oops.
Well, anyway, let's not go too...
I'm sorry. It looks like
a huge mandolin. Weeds of it.
What?
Do you stand up and play it?
No, I don't think you stand up and play. You pick it, I think.
So if you could be a star in the world of classical music or in the world of comedy, and you can only be a star in one of those worlds.
Oh no! I'm sorry. This is the mandolin.
Did you
look
let
at
me
that.
Finish my?
I'm sorry. Look at this. Look at this. That is a huge instrument.
That looks like a balalaika.
But look at it. It's a mandolin.
It's a Komodo. It's a Komodo violin.
But you play it sideways, like. And there's a woman playing it. Go ahead.
Could be a world famous classical violist, assuming there is such a thing.
Yeah, there are a few.
Okay. Or you could be a world famous comic, and you can only pick one because...
Comic.
You pick comic. Okay. Comic is your... So you say comedy is a love, is your first love, or has become your first love. It was your first love was viola, but comedy came along and stole you away.
It did, yeah. Viola is like that long marriage you have, and like it's love, hate.
It's not exciting anymore.
It's not, no. And comedy is like the mistress.
Have you heard of the violist Evan Wilson?
No.
Did you make that up?
No, I went to summer camp with Evan Wilson, but then he became a very important violist. I think he was first violist for the Los Angeles Philharmonic or something.
One quick question
before
we get to the viola performance. Why is it that there's such a thing as a world-famous violinist who doesn't write music but is only world-famous because they play violin? There's people that are only world-famous because they play piano, even though they don't write anything or they don't have any hits, quote-unquote. But there's no world famous guitarist that's only world famous because they play guitar.
Of course there is.
There is? Who it is?
Classical guitar players.
Tons.
I mean, other than Django Reinhardt.
There's tons of them. Wes Montgomery.
But that's not associated with a group that has hit songs?
I think it's probably just because there's so many famous guitar players who are like pop guitarists that they distract from the classical, where there's like no pop, like violists. So the only ones we look at are the ones who are like playing other people's music.
Now, is Yasha Heifetz in that crowd so far, and it's a Yo-Yo Ma, I know you don't play those instruments, but it's in the same family. Are those guys just that good, or is a lot of marketing and PR and bullshit like it is in every other field?
They are that good. There are probably other people who are that good who don't have attention.
The great Jewish classical musicians, especially the Russian ones, that's it. That's the gold standard.
Oh my God.
Right? Am I lying?
I don't know.
Heifetz and Horowitz on the piano, Rubinstein, Yitzhak Perlman, all
You play the guitar, don't you?
Now, I don't want to say something about what Dan's question. Just to be clear, in classical music, you play the notes on the page. So you become famous as a virtuoso interpreter of classical music. These other guitarists like Django Reinhardt, they may not write songs, but it's jazz. So they're still creative. They're still writing. They're improvising. So the analog to what you're describing with her would be like Andre Segovia or Julian Bream or one of these famous classical guitarists. But there's many famous classical guitarists, right?
Yeah, I don't know any. I couldn't tell you any of their names, but
the average person, when you say great guitarist, the average person is going to say Eddie Van Halen. They're going to say
those are rock stars,
you know, because those are the famous ones, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Do you play the guitar? Don't you play the guitar?
Yes, I do.
So why'd you say you play the mandolin?
Because he plays the mandolin too.
Well, I mean,
do you see? Like, you just met me. Do you see what I go through?
Listen,
is that
to
the
me.
Dumbest question you've?
No, it's not the dumbest question. You said she said I play the viola, and you said I play the mandolin. Like, I'm assuming that if you play an instrument, like everybody has like their instrument.
Well, some people play more than one instrument.
But your thing is the viola.
I play the viola. I could also play the violin. I don't really play the violin, but I could because it's so similar.
And she probably plays piano.
But I know I actually am very bad at piano. But most people also
doesn't play piano.
I'm hilariously inept.
Most musicians play piano,
but I'm the exception. Yeah, most string players also can play a little piano.
I can play piano.
So no, why don't we hear a little bit of Isabel?
I should have brought my guitar.
You have a guitar?
We'd have to plug it in. So I don't think we have any legit acoustics here. I don't have the combination. You know how to get in there?
Yeah, I do.
Open it for me, and then she can take her viola out. And Dan will have to talk.
Everybody's got an assignment.
There was not a dumb question.
By the way, Isabel,
how can I play the mandolin?
We don't
play the guitar.
It wasn't how can you play the mandolin? That wasn't what I.
We don't pay our guests, but we do give you the gift of literature. I've written a book. If you would like a free copy, there's one right over there. I can give you one.
I am going to tell you something amazing about this. We're on YouTube, right?
Looks just like a violin.
But here's the thing,
Dan. Bigger.
She has a bow there. Show them your bow.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, that's now this doesn't look like a high-tech piece of anything, right?
No.
Some bows can cost tens of thousands of dollars. Am I right? Tens of thousands of dollars for a bow.
My bow is not that expensive, but they can be. I have actually a hilariously cheap bow. A lot of my fellow musicians laugh when I tell them how cheap it is.
How cheap is it?
It's like $400.
But even $400.
Yeah, that doesn't sound that cheap. What's the difference with the very expensive one? What is that made out of?
Wood and horsehair, but I mean, like, it's cheaply made. There's like a lot of bow makers are like, that's their specialty. They just make the bow. So it's like this very intense craftsmanship. I think this is probably like, I don't know who made this bow. Maybe it's like factory made. It's like all crooked.
Different when you.
Arguably, I've been using this since I was 15 and it's been fine and I'm just comfortable with
it. Does it kind of remind you of Harry Potter and the wands?
Yeah, yeah. someone referred to the bow as the wand recently on another podcast, and I thought that was hilarious.
Anyway, here's Isabel and her Walmart bow.
am I playing into this microphone?
I don't know. How do we do this?
Getting his...
I think just play, and it should...
Oh, he's getting his guitar.
Yeah, but you can put... You can before he gets here,
if
you want.
All right, tell me how this sounds.
Okay, go ahead. Sounds good already. You're tuning, right?
No, this is an original piece.
That's a Korean song called Tuning.
I can play you some Bach. I don't know.
Give me your A string. Okay.
You're like, all right, that's enough viola.
So is there a song where the viola is, or a piece where the viola is the front and center?
Never.
It's never front and
center? What I was going to play was one of the Bach cello suites, which violas steal and play.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, play it.
This is Bach. Wait, what's his name? Wilhelm? Johann.
Johann Sebastian Bach,
the courant, or part of it, I don't know how long you want me to play, from the first cello suite.
Okay, for the first cello suite. Here on Rondo.
That was
imagine
amazing.
With a good bow how that would have sounded.
Yeah, I wouldn't rosin it either.
Well, that's the oldest.
This?
Oh yeah.
That smoke on the water.
See, that's the thing about a viola. Like if it was like a violin, she could play like, you know, Czardos or something like so like one of these like, or you know, like. But, can you play it? What? Can you play it?
Can
you play it? Hold on. I can
fake it.
This is an electric guitar, but it makes a little noise. Okay, bum, bum, bum. Let me just. Okay. One, two, three, four.
This at all. I'm making it up. Yeah, I can't do anymore. You dig it.
What is this that you're playing anyway? Exactly.
It's a famous, very famous like violin solo. Oh, okay. But every instrument kind of plays it.
Yeah.
Well, what about Ode to Joy? Okay. Can you do some Ode to Joy?
Oh, sure.
Play some Ode to Joy if you wouldn't mind.
This is Beethoven's Ode to Joy.
Oh, go ahead. Give her another one.
Well, I don't know much classical music, but
that's it. That's
there's a great video on YouTube where like it's a flash mob kind of Ode to Joy. Have you seen that?
No.
Like they're just on some street. I guess it's in Vienna or somewhere. And some guy, it's like one guy playing like a lone violinist or whatever. And then everybody else comes out and it's like bassoons come out. And like somebody rolls out a timpani and starts. And then there's a whole chorus comes out and goes, you know, whatever the schlieben, lagen, heap, whatever that shit is.
This,
you know,
this is how disrespected the viola is. Like in Peter and the Wolf, there's no viola. There's no character for the viola, right?
Really?
You're right. Yeah, I've played Peter and the Wolf, but we don't. We're just the strings are Peter.
Peter, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, subbing in for the Lion King seems like a pretty huge deal.
So is that your like day job, as it were?
Kind of. Well,
music.
It's how I make most of my money.
That's how you make most of your money.
Yeah.
Are you making money in stand-up these days?
I'm just starting to. I mean, I'm in a weird spot where I like the day before the shutdown, I did the Tonight Show and was about to, you know, try to.
Oh, with Fallon?
Yeah, do more gigs and then. You know, I did it on March 11th, 2020. So it was like the last show with a live audience.
I like telling people I went to Juilliard because they act impressed. And then I act modest. And I love that. They're like, whoa, Juilliard. I'm like, it's nothing. They're like, wow, humble and talented. I'm like, yes. I am perfect. It's annoying when sometimes someone hasn't heard of Juilliard. Because then I just have to politely explain to them that it's a big deal. They're like, oh, what's Juilliard? I'm like, it's just, you know, one of the best music schools. They're like, oh, music? My niece plays violin. I'm like, yeah, she wouldn't get in.
And then that was my last performance for months.
You know, I tried to get on. I tried to get on Fallon, but the guy that books it, was it Michael Cox or something?
Mm-hmm.
He said, I got to send him in. Did he do this to you? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. He said, I got to send him the very 5 minutes, the exact 5 minutes that I want to do on the show. No more, no less. Just send me a DVD or a video file of the 5 minutes precisely that you're going to do on the show. And I'm like, you know, I know.
What do you mean no?
I'll tell you why no. Because I don't want to send you the exact... What if you don't like one of the jokes and I got to send another tape? How about I send you 7 or 8 minutes and you pick the stuff that you think is best for the Tonight Show? It just... For me to send you 5 minutes, if you don't like one joke, that means I got to send you another tape, which tells me you probably don't want me on the show anyway. You're just trying to make it difficult.
No, well, how would you extrapolate that from that?
Because nobody else does it that way, and it doesn't make logical sense to do it that way. Isabel, I know you're probably a friend of yours because he used you, but... But did you have to submit the exact 5 minutes that you were going to do?
I'll just go on record saying I love Michael Cox. And
you don't have to say anything bad about Michael Cox.
I did? You know, I did an audition showcase for the show. Okay. So I did the 5 minutes on a showcase and they approved that 5 minutes. And that was that. Did
you, so it's pretty much the same thing.
So it was like a tape, but live.
But did you do only 5 minutes?
Or yes.
Okay. So he does that with everybody.
But he did.
It wasn't just that.
He did like ask me to change like one thing, you know, but I didn't have to send a new tape.
Yeah. That's normal. Like, but in other words, my feeling was this. If I got to send in the 5 minutes and you don't like one or two of the jokes, that means I got to send in another 5 minutes. So, and we can keep, and it seems like it's just annoying.
Or maybe they would like your 5 minutes and you'd be a household name.
No, because you don't become a household name from Fallon. I mean,
why don't you just send in 5 minutes?
Clearly.
I mean, instead
no, because I just got the sense that they weren't going to use me anyway.
Oh, God. Well, mental gymnastics.
No. I think this is valid.
This is why you have no love life. It's like, she's not going to date me anyway. Just ask her out.
Just send in the 5 minutes. It's probably fucking brilliant.
I'd rather just send in 7 minutes to another talk show, and they can say, here are the 5 minutes we like. My feeling was, is that he didn't really want to use me. I know because I know people that have done it. I don't know anybody that's just sent in a tape to Michael Cox that Michael didn't even know from a hole in the wall and got booked.
The people
that I know that got booked because Michael liked them, or he saw him somewhere.
Well, maybe he saw you somewhere.
He didn't, because when my manager called him up, he's like, oh, yeah, well, I don't really know him, but I haven't sent 5 minutes.
Sounds like
you would have gotten booked.
No, I don't think so. I think, and I would.
Why bother even trying?
Because I have a question for Isabel.
I can do other shows that are maybe not as high profile as Fallon, but close enough. And so I just do those.
It is amazing how the Tonight Show went from being really the Mount Everest of show business kind of to just a generic another talk show, no better or worse than a million others, right? It is a sad decline.
Well, look, nothing. I mean, the past, you know, is in the past, and the whole world's been upended by. I mean, there's people you can go on Rogan.
All right, not sad, but stark. It's nobody saw that coming.
No, nobody saw. Nobody saw. You know, Instagram stars coming either, or YouTube stars. But did you get anything, Isabel, from the Tonight Show in particular? I mean, it must have raised your profile somewhat, anyway.
I got a few new followers, and then COVID. So nothing, but then now I'm like working the road, headlining a little bit.
Oh, you're headlining.
So a little bit. So I think having the name, it's like, you know, it's the same thing like going to Juilliard. It's sort of having like a good housekeeping seal of approval. It doesn't actually, you know, who actually saw the set, but people are like, oh, well, it's something. We can put that on the...
Are you mostly opening or are you most... Now you're mostly opening for people, I assume. You've only been doing this, what, 5 years or so?
6 years.
6 years. I can tell you, not until... After 10 years was I exclusively headlining and maybe even a little bit beyond that. So I would assume that you're mostly opening, but I could be wrong.
It's not that I'm not exclusively headlining, but I'm just waiting for that person to have me open for them. So until then, if I get a headlining gig, I'll do that myself. But if it's not like I'm above opening for sure. I definitely would love to open.
Do you have any like Henny Youngman or Jack Benny like integration of your viola into the act? You do.
I do.
Did you do that on Tonight Show?
No, I do it not that often. I only do it like for like the last few minutes if I'm headlining or something as kind of a little encore because I'm very nervous about them becoming too connected with each other. Like when I started out, I wanted to keep them very separate. I wanted to know I could just do comedy.
Yeah, this is typical of comedians, but I just want to let you know the Comedy Cellar is different than the other comedy clubs. because we're not highbrow and we like gimmicks. and gimmicks is the wrong word. We don't actually consider them to be gimmicks. Like, if you can do something like that, that other people can't do, don't let them browbeat you into keeping it out of your act. You can do it. It's funny. You think the audience says, oh, that was just too entertaining. It was too interesting and unusual and something I'd never seen before. I really wish she'd just tell some boring white person clever lines.
What I think she's getting at is that she doesn't want to be...
I wish we could just have some nice misdirect.
Cut this entertainment. I want wry observations.
Well, what I think she's getting at, Noam, is she doesn't want to be in a position where she shows up without the viola and they're like, where the fuck's the viola?
Exactly.
Why'd you get in a position where they want you to show up, all right?
Like this show.
This was very rare. Normally I would have said, I'm definitely not bringing my viola, but...
Can you play the violin solo from Dust in the Wind?
What is... I don't know it.
Can she play that by ear?
I thought you might know that.
Don't you guys get that she's saying she doesn't want to play the viola? She just wants to talk about
She definitely can play Pachelbel's Canon.
That's a great one. That's
do some Pachelbel Canon.
I don't even know what key is it in.
But like, there's.
Okay,
yeah, right, go ahead. We'll do some Pachelbel, and then we'll continue with my interrogation.
All right. Right, like that. Okay. 2, 3, 4.
Join on whistling.
That's amazing.
There's a reason.
Nice, very nice. We're available for private parties, for weddings.
There's a reason that song's been a hit for 200 years.
You know what? I couldn't figure out why your name sounded so familiar, then I just figured it out.
Hagen does.
You ran that set at my show at Westside.
Yes, right? I did right before COVID.
You have a show at another comedy club?
So the question then...
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Of course, of course. That was for Fallon, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
The question is do you think you're ready to audition for The Cellar? And if so, how come you haven't made any overtures in that direction?
I've made myself available to be asked to audition for sure. But you feel weird. You don't want to
Noam will just go online and look you up and then if
no, I want you to send me the exact 5 minutes. but you got to bring your viola.
I refuse.
The thing is, I think what she's trying to avoid is some comics, if they don't have their, people don't want them on the stage, and so she doesn't want to be beholden to the viola.
Basically, I got tired of lugging the thing around, and so I started stand up, so I didn't have to bring it. So now I have to bring it again, and I'm like, well, this is the reason I...
Well, thank you for bringing it. They were
hawking.
Hawking me, and no one will take any opportunity to talk about music instead of comedy.
Well, that mandolin viola thing was pretty good we did,
that was
right?
Great. That was great content.
That was great.
So
I can't wait to put a clip of
the
that.
The comedy seller is actually... really does, I think, I wouldn't say, I would say unique among all the clubs in New York. I mean, I don't know what all the clubs do, but in actively seeking out new people, I don't know that the other clubs are actively seeking out anybody. I think they're just hanging out, and if you beg enough, and you hang out enough, they might let you audition or send a tape.
Why is that? That's ridiculous.
If it ain't broke, you know.
Yeah. Well, it is broke because.
But it's
you guys really are interested in the artists.
No.
Yeah.
They're interested in having a good show, and they have a lot of repeat business, so they need new people. I mean, there's only so much people can hear my uncle joke again and again.
I mean, love your uncle joke.
It's a great joke.
It's a great joke, your uncle joke.
We've had this conversation many times, and I always feel like I'm putting it, that people don't understand it, but people always think that because we do a good job at the Comedy Cellar, it betrays some sort of deep care about comedy and artistry and stuff like that. And the thing is, of course, I'm a musician myself. Of course, I value artistry and all that stuff.
You can put the viola away.
But
oh, great.
Thank you, Dan.
But it's a business. And I would think you don't need to value artistry or comedy in order to understand that you have to have the best comedy in the world on your stage. It's like, I don't need to love pizza, but if I'm going to have a pizzeria, you better goddamn know I'm going to put all my effort into making sure I have the very best pizza I can have. Oh, you must really love pizza. No, I'm in business.
But there are some club owners, and in particular, the Stand is in this category, where the owners started off as comedy fans. And so to them, there's a particular meaningfulness. This is not the case with the Comedy Cellar. This is not the case with, I think, most clubs. Well, maybe Gotham. Chris Mazzilli, rather, was a comic, so he might have had a certain affection for the art form. But most of the clubs were just, these were businessmen trying to make money, and so they weren't necessarily.
So how do you explain this? Why do the clubs that are run by people who have been comedians and who care about comedy so much, apparently, why do they have check spots? And why does the club that doesn't care that much like that, why do I have the sense to say, no, I have performers on my stage. I'm not going to hand out checks while they're performing.
It's very classy.
I'm saying like.
Yeah, I can't understand. I don't know why. I guess because, it's just they.
No, you're right.
Yes, you're
right.
I think it's insane to me to be giving out checks.
But that's what I'm trying to say is because you think about the artist. Like you.
No, it's bad for business.
I don't know. I think that you really take.
You think the show doesn't suffer when the last comic is trying to talk over people who had the tuna salad? Yeah. Like, you know, this is
disgusting. This is actually awful.
Way to do a show.
It's horrible.
So I mean, like, I'm not saying I don't care about comedy. I'm just saying like that is not what you're seeing.
You're a perfectionist, and you really pay attention to the details. And
he's trying to make money, is what he's trying to tell you. You keep fighting him. You're fighting him tooth and nail
it's
on
not,
this.
Yeah, of course I'm trying to make money, but it's not just money. It's like you do it, something, do it right.
No, yeah, that's. I mean, what's his face was asking me. Not like somehow, like I don't know why he's asking me this. Kyle, what makes the Cellar like the best club? Kyle Smith.
Who's that?
The National Review we had 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I should have just said he's just trying to run a business.
Well, you know, because it reminds me.
Like, Noam really cares about the comedians, and he puts the comedians first, and he cares about the sound, and he cares about the seating, and he pays attention to the details.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the wrong answer.
No, that's the right answer, but the wrong motivation.
But it's not money. So that you do something, you do something right. So when I was a kid, playing the band in the Wah, I would get really mad when the musicians wouldn't play well. Even if we were playing something funny or lighthearted or whimsical or spontaneous, let's not bullshit around here. And they'd be like, and they would think, oh, it's because, you know, you're trying to make money, blah, blah, blah. I say, no, because when I would grow up, and I'd play with my father, he played guitar too, and we'd play in the living room. If I didn't take it seriously, he'd get furious at me, just like, oh, just forget it, we're not playing today. And it was just the two of us. It's like, you just do it, you know, you just do it right, that's all.
If you care about money enough and you care about artistry enough, you actually get the same result, it turns out.
Yes.
That's interesting, that's good, that's true.
You do have to have a certain kind of, for lack of a better word, sophistication. You have to be able to understand what's going on.
But it is caring some people don't. Details. And, you know, some people really don't give a shit. They don't give a shit what it sounds like. They don't give a shit what it looks like.
I think it's also an intelligence. Some people have no idea why their show's not good. They don't have the wherewithal to say, oh, it's the sound. Right. It's because the music from the bar is bleeding in and it's ruining the, you know.
Yeah.
You must be very, like, sensitive to that as a musician. Like, you notice, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it drives most comics crazy, though, totally. When you can hear the music. Like, it just ruins.
If I could make you a star in comedy with a snap of my finger, and the only price to pay would be give up music, would you take it?
When you say give up music, do you mean give up?
You can listen to music.
I can listen to it?
Oh, sure, you can listen all day long.
What's a star in comedy?
Nice.
Well, what's a star in comedy?
How much am I making?
Dan Natterman level.
Sarah Silverman or higher? I mean, whatever you want. Whatever
I mean,
you
probably,
want.
Probably, yeah. So I just can never pick up an instrument again.
You pick it up, you can't play it?
Yeah, yes.
You would take that. Wow.
I think. I don't know. I might feel differently tomorrow, but, you know, today.
I think it was a Twilight Zone episode like this, wasn't there? Like, so.
And also, somebody you don't know will die. That was a Twilight
Zone. In that case, I take Dan Natterman level. I don't care.
That was a movie, The Box or whatever.
No, that's
there was a
Twilight,
movie, it was, but it was also
that.
A Twilight
that's
Zone.
That's like the only episode of The Twilight Zone I ever saw as a kid, and it freaked me out so much.
Which one is that?
That was
and someone you don't know will die.
You get $1 million. You press this button, and if you press the button, you get $1 million or whatever the money was, but somebody you don't know will die. And then so the guy there, him and his wife all night long, they're debating, okay, they press the button. The guy comes over with the money, and he takes the box back. Like, what are you doing with the box? Oh, I'm just going to, we're going to reprogram it to give it to somebody else, but it'll be somebody you don't even know.
Get it?
He'll probably die.
Because now he's going to die when the next guy
gets goosebumps. That goosebumps. Episode haunts me. I swear to God, that's awful. I really think you should send in those 5 minutes, and I think that you concocted a story that does not exist in reality. I think it's like, first of all, the 5 minutes are probably hysterical.
No, but it's very hard. It's very annoying to make a
tape it's annoying.
That's
so
precisely. I mean, I assume he's not going to time it with an atomic clock, but you know. To get it
can
to
you believe
5 minutes.
I have to put up with?
No, because there's other shows, Perry. If there was no other show, I would do it. But there's other
it's
shows. So I ended
how
up doing
how much
I ended up doing
is it
TBS. I ended up doing Conan. This was, you know, so I mean it doesn't really
but how annoying, really, on a scale from 1 to 10, how
very, 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 very annoying. Very annoying. To make those tapes is I hate making tapes for talk shows. So
it is the worst.
Now you're making it even
just
more difficult.
Take videos of yours that you already have and edit them into a 5 minute thing and do those jokes.
Well, because most of the jokes are jokes that, by the very nature of doing a talk show, they want jokes you haven't done in another talk show. So I don't have the tape handy. So I got to do it. So you're going to make it difficult. I'll just do Cohen. I mean, if doing the Tonight Show meant what it used to mean, then I would go through those hoops. But since it doesn't, I'll do Conan or Colbert or whatever other show, you know. What's that?
Too late for Conan.
Conan's gone.
Conan is gone, but there's Corden, there's Myers, there's Colbert, you know.
Except for the Insult Dog Triumph. Yeah. I don't think I ever saw anything on the Conan O'Brien show. I really like, I liked him. He's a pleasant enough guy, but I never understood how did he do so well for so long? You know, that's a terrible thing to say. I'm sorry I said that. I barely ever watch it. Like, okay, what I'm saying is like,
well,
Johnny Carson.
It's about the guests. The guests are good, and Triumph was amazing.
Triumph was amazing, right? So Johnny Carson was phenomenal, right? Like, obviously, Johnny Carson was. And then David Letterman, especially when he first came on the scene, this was something fresh and amazing. And he was funny, and he was alpha male, and he was cool, and he was original. I mean, it was, you know. And Dan has to go. We can wind up. And other than those two guys, nobody ever really made that much of an impact on me. Now, Conan was a funny guy.
A $15 value.
But as a host, I don't know. I never fell in love with Conan.
I don't know.
I feel bad now because the truth is I've never watched almost any of these shows.
Okay,
so
I'm afraid
Conan O'Brien might hear that I actually said this. And I really feel bad. He doesn't give a shit about me, but I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings anyway. I feel bad that I said it. But
how can we never feel bad when you say things like that to me?
Well, you're here to defend yourself.
Anyway,
you know?
Folks, I have to. You want to wrap it up, or you guys can continue? But
I know. I guess all I'm saying is that aside,
people think say he's brilliant. I'm not familiar with his work. I really don't know, but people say he's incredible.
He's very, very funny. I think he's very, very talented. I don't think I ever got him as like the. No, I didn't get Leno either, by the way. It wasn't like none of these guys.
How come you don't feel bad if Leno hears that you're going to hurt his feelings?
Mike Douglas?
And now we're going back.
Yeah.
All right. You have a spot. You're going to be
late. Yeah, I have a spot. But do you want to say, do you want to wrap it up, Noam?
Yeah. Thank you very much. That was really fun. You should come on Monday nights. We play music in the olive tree.
Oh, fun.
And you bring your viola.
All right.
But doesn't she have to kind of rehearsal first? Because she can just show up?
Oh, she's got it together. She can just sit
She's
in.
Got it together.
Wow.
Dan's book is called...
No obligation. My book, Ira Spiro Before COVID, available on Amazon.
Buy it.
And thank you. And podcast at comedyseller.com for questions, comments, and suggestions.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Sorry, Conan.